Welcome to Life After Journalism, in which we hear from the people who brought us the news and see what they're up to now that they've moved on with their lives. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and as the minute waltz fades away, we ask that the studio audience put their hands together for today's guest as I introduce Bruce Montgomery. Bruce has a background in journalism and PR, was a one-time staff member of the Fraser government, and wrote for The Australian for more than 20 years. He begins by telling us how he got into journalism.
I became a cadet journalist with the ABC in 1968. I was doing law at the University of Tasmania and was rapidly becoming bored with it. I was flatting with a journalist at the Mercury newspaper and was attracted to the professional trade through his participation in it. So I pestered the ABC for a year until a cadetship came up and I got a cadetship with the ABC. It was the ABC News office in Hobart, which was, in those days, for young cadets, mainly radio, but venturing into television. 1970, I decided I wanted to go to England to work, so I went to work at the Examiner newspaper in Launceston to get some money subbing experience, because I thought jobs would be more available for subs in England. I went to England in 71, 72, 73, worked at newspapers over there, but mainly as a reporter, and then came back to Tasmania in 1973, worked for another 12 months at the Examiner, then returned to the ABC in 74. And then I went to work as a press secretary for the Fraser government, 79 to 83, but based in Tasmania, so I was Malcolm's eyes and ears in Tasmania for 4 years. And then in 1983, Bob Hawke became Prime Minister, got rid of all of Fraser's press secretaries, including me, and I joined The Australian as their Tasmanian correspondent in 1983 and stayed with the paper then for the next 20 years.
Right, so you've been in and out of the profession really then, haven't you?
Yeah, I had that 4 year spell where I went to work effectively in public relations or being a press secretary, the dark side as they call it, and then was quite happy to get back to what I thought was probably the best job going in any case with The Australian down here, because it was as a one-man band and I could do my own photography as well.
What is it that made you go into public relations then? Because it's something that you've gone back to in recent years, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I guess my attention span is not huge and I'm always looking for new things to do. And in 1979, when I joined the Fraser government, there was a fairly significant financial incentive to go. So I had a young family at the time and I wanted to get some more experience and also obviously get some more money. So I decided to have a look at that side of public relations, and I nearly doubled my salary to go there. That's one of the reasons I went. But as I say, after 4 years, I'd done enough and I was quite happy to get back, and I didn't have a choice about a pay cut. Bob Hawke made that choice for me.
You use the term the dark side, though. I've heard it before described as playing for the enemy by going into PR.
Yeah.
Is that something that you struggled with a bit?
Yes. I'm not a conservative by nature, and I'd like to think of myself as a free thinker. I tend to think more as a journalist and public relations person. So I wasn't particularly comfortable working for the coalition, 79 to 83. But as I say, it was a good experience, and I met a lot of people. Then I went to The Australian, and I was happy there for 20 years. But you're probably aware that forestry is and always has been the major issue in Tasmania.
Yes.
And I was approached in 2003 by the then Deputy Premier to see whether I wanted to have a look at communications within forestry, within the government and within the industry, to see what was going wrong, what suggestions I could put up. And so I said that I would do it, but I would be advocating change about the way that forestry was conducted.
Right.
And particularly in its communications. This time I was able to name a significant salary to do the job on a three-year contract. I found that I could do it for 2 years, but it was too difficult to try and effect change within the industry. They weren't prepared to listen.
Yeah, yeah. Up until that point, you were the Tasmanian correspondent.
I was variously called the Tasmanian correspondent for The Australian or the Hobart Bureau Chief. It's the same thing.
Okay. What was it like trying to advocate Tasmanian issues to the rest of Australia?
Well, it just depended who I was dealing with at News Limited.
Mm.
Because you always have to deal with a liaison in Sydney in order to sell your stories for tomorrow's paper or for the weekend paper. and I found that there were a range of people occupying the position of Chief of Staff in Sydney, some of whom were extremely interested in Tasmanian politics and Tasmanian stories, others who treated it as a couple of paths on the bottom of page six, which is, you know, roughly his geographical position in the nation, and it can be very, very frustrating. And it's always a fight for space at The Australian. I used to talk about a thing called bureau paranoia.
Yeah.
That news bureaus, not only here but sort of around the world, suffer that if you're a lone wolf in a post somewhere and suddenly after a week or 2 weeks none of your stories have appeared, you begin to wonder what you're doing wrong. Don't they love me anymore? Should I be doing something else? That's a perpetual thing that goes with being a correspondent.
Yeah.
Particularly for a major national newspaper. It's so competitive to get stories in that you've really got to keep focus on what your job is, otherwise you can get despondent about it.
What did you find in common then between PR and being a journalist?
There isn't that much in common. PR tends to feed off journalism. I mean, they're really paying you for your reputation. That's what I found particularly with forestry. And it's because I had a good network, obviously, in Tasmania. If you've been here long enough, you end up knowing most people of influence around the place. And I think what essentially they were doing was they were buying the line that if I thought certain things about forestry, then it might be influential in what other people might think as well. That was really the only nexus. The job itself is like chalk and cheese. And what I've always enjoyed about journalism is being able to take a neutral stand on things, to say what I think, to write what I think. After going through a fact-gathering exercise, I've always found it difficult to sell propaganda that I don't necessarily believe in.
Mm.
There's something of the salesman about that that doesn't appeal to me.
But it sounds like when you took up the PR role at the forestry, you were essentially trying to not just commentate on things anymore, but to enact some change within.
The thing about journalism is you sit on the sidelines for so long, watching and reporting. In the initial years, you tell yourself, you know, well, maybe I should have been a politician. I can do better than these people. Or how can I continue to sit on the side when I think that I could actually be making a more positive contribution to society?
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened with the forestry job, is that I convinced myself in the end that I could make a difference, I could bring about change, because I had a good knowledge and I thought fairly good perceptions of forestry and what was wrong and right with it. And it was also a big learning curve for me, because I was able to get involved in a lot of the science of forestry, browsing management and things like that, which I really enjoyed doing. But I was really positioned on one side of the argument. That's what's difficult.
Yeah, yeah. Now, a regular recent reference that I have found to you is your work with the victims of Agent Orange in Vietnam.
Oh, yeah.
So tell me about that. How did you get involved in that sort of thing?
Well, similar theme. I was young enough, old enough, to be in the ballot for National Service for Vietnam in the late 60s.
Yeah.
But I was against the war, and I wasn't conscripted. Apart from minor protesting, I wasn't really heavily involved in it. But I've always been acutely aware of the legacy of Vietnam without knowing that much about it. And I went to Vietnam in 2000 when Bill and Hillary Clinton were in Hanoi for the final shaking of hands with the Vietnamese, which was really the final hurrah of his presidency. I met some American Vietnam veterans who had this magnetic attraction to Vietnam. They just kept coming back after the war.
Mm.
And I found that they'd actually started a friendship village outside Hanoi to help victims of Agent Orange from the war. And you probably will have read what some of the perceived effects are of spraying during the war on the local population. I wasn't that much aware of it in 2000. And I thought I should do something about it instead of sitting on the sidelines as usual.
Mm.
I also had a friend who was heavily traumatised. He was a Vietnam War veteran. His life was pretty screwed up from then on, and I thought that perhaps if I came back to Australia and discussed with him some project that we could assist victims of Agent Orange, then it could be therapeutic for him as well.
Yeah.
And that's what gave birth to the trust. We, first of all, bought wheelchairs, now we buy herds of cows for families affected by Agent Orange.
You seem to be using your journalistic talent there as well in getting word out about your cause.
Yeah, I haven't done that deliberately, because I've taken a fairly low profile to it. I was at the Australian when I started this up, and they were quite interested in what I was doing, so they ran a piece in the Colour magazine of the Weekend Australian about it. I disappeared into obscurity for a while. We raised most of our money through the internet. And ever since we got going on the net properly, people have become more and more aware of it. I'd just been approached a couple of times recently by the Australian again. One was for a piece to be written about our involvement in Vietnam, and another one was for me to do a first-person piece for them, and they're only a couple of months apart. I don't go out looking for publicity for it deliberately.
Yeah.
I just do what I can through the corridors of my email list.
What is it that keeps you writing at the moment?
When I threw in the towel with forestry, I decided to go back to university. I'd actually left university in 67 after not completing my law degree because I wanted to get into journalism.
Yeah.
And so when the end came about 2005 with forestry, I spoke to the University of Tasmania and they actually approached me about doing some lecturing, which I was happy to do in journalism, and then asked me if I wanted to do some study, and I said, you know, I wouldn't mind finishing that degree that I started 40 years ago. And they said, if you've done 40 years of journalism, don't expect you to do an undergraduate degree. We'd like you to do a research. We eventually agreed on a master's research degree where I was looking at the future of newspapers vis-a-vis the internet, which was of extreme interest to me throughout my years at The Australian and then after that. So I took time out to do that full-time, completed my master's and graduated in 2009. And after that, I had to decide whether I was going to make a run for a university post or come back to freelancing. Well, as you probably know, you actually need a PhD to lecture in journalism in most Australian universities, and I wasn't particularly interested in pursuing a PhD, so I was quite happy with the master's that I had, and I'm back effectively as a true freelancer now.
Yeah, what are you finding the journalist landscape then in Australia at the moment?
The evolution of journalism has been enormous in the years since I started. I started, if you like, in newspaper journalism in the days of the linotype, and so we were still filing stories on typewriters and one small slip of paper,
Firstly
a paragraph to a page, and then it went out to the linotype operators to set. What I've done now is, through both my study and the practice, I've followed the evolution of newspapers in particular to the stage now where I get The Australian on my iPad each morning. Part of my thesis was to look at the economic effects of technological change on Australian newspapers and their business viability. And what I'm finding is that where I was a journalist with a notebook and a pencil, a modern journalist simply has to do so much more than I have had to do, because you're filling the newspaper, you're also perhaps doing a blog, you will be doing stuff for the newspaper's website, you might be doing voice pieces, you might be doing interviews, you might be shooting stills or even video.
Yeah.
And I just think for young journalists these days, they need considerable skills and considerable energy to get the job done in the time allotted.
Is that a piece of advice that you'd give to people who are aspiring to be journalists?
You have to think really hard about it. I found that when I was teaching journalists at university, you tended to get a lot of people who fell into two camps. There were a very few who were keen, nosy people who wanted to know what was going on, who wanted to do proper investigative journalism. But a lot of the others really were more interested in fronting up for Getaway or something like that, you know. There is a fluffy end of journalism which doesn't appeal to me, but it seems to appeal to a lot of young people.
But have you found that the journalism that you are encountering now, there is still that deep sort of journalism integrity that you used to?
Yeah, I think so. It's under attack. I think newspapers like The Australian are still providing that level of deep reporting which we require. I just think that papers like The Age and The Sydney Morning Herald are going to struggle as time goes on, because they simply don't have the economies anymore to employ journalists of that ilk. Normally journalists who can fulfil that sort of function are at the top end of the pay range. There's only so much money that a newspaper has to employ journalists. There's a sort of an imposed salary cap on it.
Yeah.
And you're going to have less and less quality journalism being produced. I mean, I worked for a while in provincial newspapers in England, and there were maybe 10 or 12 reporters working for the paper. Well, if you go back to those same newspapers in the counties today, you'll probably find one person, maybe two, sitting in front of a computer screen, and 80% of what they use comes from either the wire services or, more likely, from public relations people.
Yeah.
All they're doing is really copying and pasting. It simply isn't the same form of journalism that people were brought up on in the counties.
What's the one thing that you've learnt from your journalism career that's been really helpful and significant to you?
The major thing is that I've been reassured by my instincts, if you like. Because I've been in it for so long, large part of the time I've been a journalist working on his own without any direction or any supervision. You have to have fairly highly tuned instincts about what a newspaper is going to use and what it's not going to use. And that means that you have to have also a highly tuned sense of what public interest is. And I've always found that what I've found interesting, intriguing, worth chasing is inevitably what the people in the street are looking for as well. And in Tasmania, you actually have a great affinity with those people. Hobart being Hobart, you bump into a lot of people every day who know you, and they tell you fairly quickly whether you're on the right track or whether you should give something up. I've been reassured that my instincts of the public interest have been just about right. That was probably my value as a correspondent while I was doing it.
Bruce Montgomery there, and you can find out more about the Vietnamese Victims of Agent Orange Trust at www.agentorange.org.au. Next week on Life After Journalism, our guest will be former political reporter Malcolm Turnbull.